And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Okay, if you had to list the top 10 worst things for planet Earth, what would they be? I'm sure some right now might include the irritating voices of the chipmunks from the new movie, pay toilets, overdraft charges. Well, today we feature the top 10 list of worst things for planet Earth. We also hear from Donna Buckby with the latest on the town of Rushford, Minnesota, and how it's now coping with recovering from the floods that rushed forward through their little town. And we hear what presidential candidate John Edwards has to say about the environment and more. It's all coming up when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
The 2 weeks coming up are probably some of the busiest of the year. We're on the final descent to Christmas, and then that strange week of moving sideways to the new year. With so much going on, and with so much to look forward to in 2008, I thought at the right time to think about the top 10 worst things for planet Earth, with the hopes that we can follow this up with the top 10 best things for planet Earth to start the new year right. That's coming up in segment 2, following a special Nature News update. We'll be heading up to Rushford, Minnesota. Remember that little town that almost got washed away by massive flooding? We'll get an update from our regular guest, Donna Buckby, on how the town is making progress. That's coming up in segment 2. But it's time now to bring you up to date by the world's most significant voices on the Earth. So now it's time for the Weekly Earth Summit. Welcome to the Weekly Earth Summit, the most important 15 minutes on Earth. I'm your host, Sydney Wildsmith, and today we bring you the final of the three presidential candidate statements delivered at a special forum in San Francisco about global climate change and the environment. What are we supposed to think about our democracy when one of the most critical issues facing not only our nation but the world continues to receive so little attention? We are, of course, talking about global climate change and the environment. There has been one attempt to discuss this issue, and all candidates from both parties were invited to share their concerns and views. Three showed up. In the interest of providing perspectives on the future of the Earth, we have already featured Hillary Clinton and Dennis Kucinich, who attended this event in San Francisco, and now bring you the final presentation by John Edwards. So now, I bring you without interruption, John Edwards on global climate change and the environment.
Thank you, thank you. And let me say a personal thank you to all of you. It's great to be here with my friends from the League of Conservation Voter Education Fund, the California LCV, National Resources Defense Council, and the Center for American Progress Action Fund. You all have been at the forefront of fighting global warming. And this forum is another one of many examples of your doing what's necessary to raise awareness about this issue, raise awareness about this crisis, and to inject it into the center of the debate, which it should be in this campaign and this election. You know, I'm not here to tell the people who know very well that global warming is a crisis, that it is a crisis. You already know that. But I am here to tell you we need a president of the United States who won't just deliver that message to a friendly audience, which is what you are. We need a president who will be straight with the American people about the challenges and the opportunities that all of us face when it comes to global warming. A week ago on Veterans Day, I talked about the sacrifices of America's finest, those who gave life for our country, who made the ultimate sacrifice to preserve our way of life. I believe that today, our generation, all of us, we owe it to them and to our children to face some hard truths. One of those truths is that the system in Washington, D.C. is broken. And there is no better example of that than global warming. Now, thanks to the hard work, and I heard Senator Clinton speaking about this, thanks to the hard work of Vice President Al Gore, we all know, and the world now knows, that global warming is in fact a crisis. We know that the need for action is urgent, and we know that the steps we need to take are right in front of us. All we have to do is have a little backbone and courage to actually do it. But Washington is not taking them. And when I look at Washington today, I see politicians who are too afraid of rocking the boat to face up to the challenges in front of us. I see good people who are caught up in a bad system that overwhelms their best intentions. I see elected leaders trying to do the right thing for the people they represent, but they are overrun because of the need to spend half of their time chasing the money they need to be elected and reelected. And I see the oil and gas companies blocking progress by spending millions of dollars and deploying hundreds of lobbyists in Washington to make sure that America stays addicted to foreign oil and fossil fuels. Meanwhile, more and more evidence that global warming is here is piling up. We now know that the Arctic ice cap could literally be gone in 23 years. Just yesterday, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change followed up on its groundbreaking reports from earlier this year with a warning that global warming will have abrupt and irreversible consequences if we're not willing to act immediately. That's more evidence than any politician should ever need. And yet, 2 weeks from now, America will send a delegate to the United Nations conference in Bali with no ideas and no solutions. It is embarrassing for the United States of America to be in that position. Throughout this campaign, I've been very clear about what I think we need to do to face this challenge. I'm proud of the fact that I came out very early and very aggressively about what we need to do to attack global warming. I said then that we need to cap greenhouse gas pollution starting in 2010 with a cap and auction system, and that we need to reduce it by 20% by 2020 and 80% by 2050, that we need to lead the world in a new global climate treaty, that we need to meet the demand for more electricity through efficiency for the next decade instead of producing more electricity. And we need to create a new energy economy fund to support U.S. research and development in energy technology and other advances by auctioning off $10 billion of greenhouse pollution permits and repealing $3 billion in oil company subsidies. Now, I have heard some politicians talk about a cap and trade system as not going far enough, as a way to avoid the word tax. But I believe that candidates running for president need to be straight with the American people about exactly what we're proposing. We've had enough double talk. We've had enough politician talk. We need to be honest with people. The truth is that carbon caps will have an impact on the cost of fossil fuels. Anyone who pretends that's not true is not being straight with America. And by the way, it is a political strategy that is absolutely doomed to failure, because we are never going to get the change we need by pretending that this is going to be easy and that no sacrifice will be required. The truth is that the big change we need will not be easy. It'll take the sustained commitment of a generation of Americans. The American people understand that, and we need a president who will challenge them to be part of the solution, not patronize them by pretending that the problem doesn't exist or that some politician can solve it for them. Back in March, only 2 days after I had announced my own global warming plan, as many of you know, Elizabeth and I sat in a hospital room and made the decision to continue with this campaign. We made that decision because both of us believed that fighting for a better America, fighting to make sure we pass a better world on to our children, is the cause of our lives. The fact that the challenges now rising up around us loom larger now than they did back then has only strengthened our resolve to continue with this effort, to keep on telling the truth about the problems we face and what it's going to take to fix those problems. Right now, we're not just turning a blind eye to global warming. We're also missing an opportunity to lead the world and reclaim the spirit of American ingenuity that has driven great advances and helped us overcome great challenges in the past. Right now, we're sitting by the side of the road as foreign companies race ahead with developing green technology. Bell Labs invented the solar cell in New Jersey in 1954. But today, 90% of solar panels are manufactured overseas. China's even produced a solar billionaire. General Motors made the first modern electric car, but today Toyota and Honda lead the world in producing hybrids. Just last week I saw this headline: foreign firms envision wind farms dotting the U.S. Why should foreign firms be the ones taking the lead in building wind farms here in America? Why is that not being done by American firms? If we take the steps that I propose, American entrepreneurs and manufacturers can lead the world in developing the green technology we need to generate clean, reliable energy and to use it more efficiently. There are so many ways that we can seize this opportunity and unleash America's innovators to lead the way into the new energy economy. We need to let entrepreneurs try 1,000 different approaches, not centrally planned government handouts. Let me give you a few examples of exactly what I mean. First, I will cut carbon welfare subsidies for oil companies to raise money that will be invested in renewable fuels like wind, solar, biofuels, and turbocharging our energy efficiency technology. Second, I'll spark a new era of innovation and competition by modernizing our electricity grids. New smart grids will let entrepreneurs create renewable energy and then to sell it back into the grid. They'll also be safer, more efficient, and more reliable. Third, I will seed innovation by giving low-interest loans to homeowners and small businesses for new technologies like solar, hot water, and electric systems. These systems are expensive, as all of you know up front, but they pay off for families in the long run, particularly when excess power can be sold to their neighbors. Fourth, I'll create a new market for energy efficiency. Right now, utilities profit from selling electricity, but have absolutely no incentive to help their customers use less energy. I will call on states to separate utilities' energy profits from their sales, as California has done, so that they can profit by meeting customers' needs with more efficient technology. Now, don't get me wrong, getting to the new energy future that all of us want to see happen for this country that we love so much will not be a cakewalk. It's true that the steps we have to take will cost money. It's true that some of these steps we need to take will meet higher energy prices. And given the scope of the crisis, there may be further steps that we need to take down the road. Every time we get new, up-to-date scientific information, it indicates that global warming is more a crisis than we thought before. But in the end, families can come out ahead if they switch to renewable fuels, use energy efficiently, and make smaller sacrifices in their own lives. I think we're ready for that. I think, actually, the American people are ready for a president who calls on them to sacrifice and asks them to be patriotic about something other than war. Because I believe we are at a critical point in this country's history. It's a place we've found ourselves before. Those who've gone before us have climbed bigger hills. My parents' generation crossed the Atlantic, went into Europe, freed Europe, and defeated Hitler and fascism. They went across the Pacific and defeated Japan. Then they came home and built the Pentagon, one of the biggest buildings in the world, in less than a year. And they built the great American middle class, the great engine of economic growth that the world has never seen duplicated. Those who have come before us have climbed the hills of inequality and fought the battle for civil rights. They've outlasted the dark force of communism. They've lived through recessions and energy crisis and the Great Depression. And every time they have proven that if we stand up and face the challenges in front of us, a better future will be our reward. This is the moral test of our generation. Will we leave our children a better world than we found, as our parents and our grandparents did? If we intend to pass this test, we have to ask ourselves a basic question. Are we willing to put political calculation aside and actually stand up with a little backbone for what's right? Are we willing to say that the time for compromise and half measures is over, and that now is the time for our party, the Democratic Party, to be bold, to stand up for what it is we actually believe in. When we look at our children in the eye and they ask us what happened, well, we have to tell them that we left this mess for them because the challenges were just too great. And we were too careful, too timid, too cautious. We didn't have the guts to do what needed to be done. Or will we be able to look them in the eye and say, in the face of great challenges, we, our generation, all of us, we stood up. We did what 20 generations of Americans have done before us. We knew that we had a responsibility to them and future generations to preserve the planet. That's our responsibility. If we choose the right path, if we make smart choices today, we can create the better America that all of us dream about. We can have a prosperous middle class while preserving our natural resources and the beauty of our planet. We can get America off its addiction to oil. We can show the world that our response to adversity is not to stick our head in the sand, not to cower in the corner, but to unleash a new era of American ingenuity, just like we have done in the past and just like our fathers and grandfathers have done before us. That is the future at the top of the hill. It's going to take courage. It's going to take resolve. We're going to have to leave behind political calculation. But we're Americans, and the American people have never, ever shrunk from a challenge. And I don't think we're going to start now. Thank you all, and God bless you.
I think it's proper that we take special note of these three presidential hopefuls, Dennis Kucinich, Hillary Clinton, and John Edwards, for taking the time to address this critical issue at the recent global climate crisis and environmental debate in San Francisco. We'll continue to bring you the week's leading voices each week here on the Weekly Earth Summit. How does a modern Minnesota farm community cope when an epic flood rages through their small rural town? We revisit the town of Rushford, Minnesota, then bring you the top 10 list of the worst things for planet Earth when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.